Hello, this is Nicole Hunter from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from Essence Magazine, January 2018 edition. So as I promised, we're going to start off with Queen Maxine. She's also on the cover of this 2018 edition. And I also stated last week that it looks like the January 2018 edition has a lot of the recaps of 2017. So Queen Maxine, there's no resting for Congresswoman Maxine Waters. Political commentator Angela Rye breaks down why Waters is more important than ever. Throughout her nearly 40 years of public service, there isn't an inequality or injustice battle Maxine Waters, Democrat from California, hasn't faced head on. And not just in America. The world knows it can count on her. In the 1980s, she took in apartheid in South Africa through divestment legislation in the California State Assembly. She sponsored the Haiti Debt Relief and Earthquake Recovery Act of 2010. She worked to help Willie Brown become the first black and the longest serving speaker in the history of the state's assembly. She contributed to the landmark Dodd-Frank legislation aimed at regulating banks and protecting consumers after the financial crisis. And last, but certainly not least, Waters has been an instrumental figure on the Democratic National Committee for 5 presidential campaigns. Congresswoman Maxine Waters' courage and the tenacity of her fight are why I wanted to work for her. Being trained in the Maxine School of Advocacy and Organizing, yes, I just made that a thing, should be required for every patriot. I quickly learned that her constituents count on her to save their homes, preserve their hospitals, protect their voting rights, and keep their streets safe. These issues are typical of a member of Congress who represents a working class community, particularly for members of color. But what's extraordinary is the fact that Waters is global. So Waters attributes her unwavering battle like tendencies to her mother, who raised Waters and her 3 older sisters in her own or on her own in the South. My mother was my original example of a strong black woman, says the congresswoman, who was dressed to the nines, of course, during a 2-hour interview. Although she was not educated, having only gone to the 3rd grade, she knew how to set an example and a foundation. Her mother remarried, and eventually Waters had 12 siblings altogether. She and her younger brothers and sisters grew up primarily in St. Louis, and she often had to fight to be heard. This, coupled with her humble upbringing, grounded her for a life of serving others and instilled in her the belief that everyone deserves a chance. Today, Waters counts being a wife. Her husband's name is Sidney Williams, a former U.S. ambassador. She's a mother to Ed and Karen Waters and a grandmother to Michael Moore and Cameron Titus, who are proud Moorhead or Morehouse grads. As important as her legislative achievements, after an appearance on MSNBC earlier that day, she found time to talk about her beginnings, her viral moments, and fighting for liberty and justice for all. So the interview is done by Angela Rye, which used to work for Maxine Waters, and she's also like a CNN commentator. So Angela's asking her, you know, some questions, and then she's responding. So the first question that Angela asked her was, before your career in public service, you were an entrepreneur. I didn't know you once owned a public relations firm in Los Angeles. And Maxine's response is, I had a partner, John Floyd, and we were called Floyd Waters. When Cicely Tyson did Sounder, I handled the PR for the movie. I also worked on some political campaigns. I did the first campaign of City Councilman David S. Cunningham, who I eventually got a job with, but we did struggle. How so? We didn't know anything about access to capital, and we didn't have a lot of money. We really started out of our pockets. We had to maintain our office, and we had one person, a receptionist, working for us. John and I did everything. That is so ironic because now you're a ranking member of the Financial Services Committee. To this day, our businesses run by black women and black men still struggle with access to capital, not only because some of us don't know how to get it, but because we still can't get access. And Maxine's response is, that's right, and it's something that I fight for. I created OMWI, which stands for the Office of Minority and Women Inclusion, in the Committee for the Dodd-Frank Legislation that I served on, with the idea that in the financial services community, we would provide the opportunity for women to get some support in ways that they had not had before, that there would be outreach not only for jobs, but for contracting in government. And you've been dedicated to this area. I work on the Financial Services Committee, and there's a gap between what I did before financial services and what I did after. I had to manage other people. You have to manage the other caucus people, and you have to deal with Wall Street. And I said, okay, I'm going to concentrate on financial services. My responsibilities are here, and I'm going to concentrate on making sure that the members of my first subcommittee and now the members of the full committee feel comfortable enough, even though they know I won't always agree with them. I'm not going to berate anybody who votes against me, but I'm going to stay on my track of opposing Wall Street abuses. I've done all that for all these years. I learned under the tutelage of Barney Frank, and I was very smart. I was able to maintain integrity despite the fact that when you work on financial services between Goldman Sachs and Bank of America and the city and all of them, you could be their person with lots of money and contribution and all. But I just refused all that and did my thing, and it worked. A long time ago, I started calling you the nation's congresswoman. You've consistently taken on national and international causes. Why? I have a strong sense of what's fair and what's not fair. And for vulnerable people who are being taken advantage of or who are being bullied or intimidated, I tend to want to be protected or to fight for them. And we're getting ready for the 2018 midterm elections. What does your role look like politically? We have got to take back the House. I continue to step outside the box, speak truth to the power, challenge the Republican Party and this president in particular, and provide a platform for millennials. They are our future, and I want to do whatever I can to empower them. And of course, I am not only an organizer and an advocate, I'm a legislator at heart. Speaking of millennials, what do you say to a young generation that wants to get involved in politics? You have to have the passion for this stuff, and you demonstrate your desire to be an elected official, to run for office, or to be an organizer based on your own initiative. If you walk into a campaign and say, what can I do? That shows a lot of interest. Then I know that you're in. So I encourage folks, if this is your passion, show it, demonstrate it. One of your viral moments this year was when you said, reclaiming my time, which is something members of Congress say all the time in hearings. It's the regular order of business. But in that hearing, it was you, and let me rewind. So Angela Rye asked, but in that hearing, it was you up against this privileged male Secretary of Treasury who thought he could talk over the ranking member of a committee. Since you've reclaimed your time, so have a lot of pastors. There was even a viral a cappella gospel song, and the Women's March named its conference Reclaiming Our Time. Did you understand the gravity of that? Well, I began to understand it after I talked with a lot of people. I met Steve Munchkin long before he became secretary, and I understood him to be a cold-blooded business person who had a reputation for foreclosure and did not respect advocates. I think I was a little bit driven to handle him. So when I started to ask him about a letter I had sent him and he tried to filibuster me, I think it was important for me to let him know that he couldn't get away with that. As you reflect on your 14 terms in Congress and how your advocacy oftentimes goes beyond what a normal legislator or congressperson would do, what will your legacy be? One of the things I discovered a long time ago was that I make people uncomfortable and that my advocacy goes beyond what politicians normally do. I have thought about all the things I've done, the things that I've been involved in, and I want to be remembered as a courageous fighter. Some of Maxine Waters' major accomplishments in history are as follows. 1977, she was elected to the California State Assembly. 1986, Waters successively championed a bill to have California state pension funds divest more than $12 billion from companies that do business in South Africa. In 1990, she was elected to the U.S. House of Representatives. In 1992, during a time of severe civil unrest in Los Angeles, the Congresswoman gathered gang members and clergymen to make a public appeal for a no-killing weekend. In 1994, the Congresswoman voted no on the 1994 Omnibus Crime Bill. She secured a $50 billion appropriation for the Youth Fair Chance Program. In 1997, she was elected Congressional Black Caucus Chair. In 1998, she was one of the creators of the Minority AIDS Initiative, which sought to address the HIV/AIDS epidemic among minority communities by providing more than $130 million in grants to various programs. The initiative has received more than $400 million in funding as of 2016. In 2002, she voted against the Iraq War resolution. In 2007, after Hurricane Katrina, the Congresswoman introduced the Gulf Coast Hurricane Housing Recovery Act of 2007 to address the region's housing infrastructure challenges. And then finally, in 2017, since his first day in office, Waters has questioned and relentlessly questioned the legitimacy of the president's election due to Russian involvement. She opted out of attending his inauguration and is a leading voice in the government calling for his impeachment. So on to some more news. So the next article that we're going to cover is called Well Said. We look back at the black women who this year spoke out bolder and louder than ever before, whether they were from the stage, screen, or from the hill. Tracy Ellis Ross, January 8th, 2017, which is over a year ago now. This is for all the women of color and colorful people whose stories, ideas, and thoughts are not always considered worthy and valid and important. But I want you to know that I see you. We see you. It is an honor to be on this show, Blackish, to continue expanding the way we are seen and known, and to show the magic and the beauty and the sameness of a story and stories that are outside of where the industry usually looks. Lena Waithe, the first Black woman to win an Emmy Award for Best Comedy Writing, and that was on September 17th, 2017. I love you all and my LGBTQIA family. I see every one of you. The things that make us different, those are our superpowers. Every day you walk out the door and put on your imaginary cape and go out there and conquer the world, because the world would not be as beautiful as it is if we weren't in it. Issa Rae. The Insecure actress won the Primetime Emmys red carpet on September 17, 2017. Quote, I'm rooting for everybody Black, end quote. Valerie Castile, Philando Castile's mother, reacting to the not guilty verdict of the police officer charged with killing her son on June 16, 2017. Quote, we're not evolving as a civilization. We have taken steps forward. People have died for us to have these rights, and now we're devolving. We're going back to 1969. What is it going to take? Question mark, end quote. Sloane Stephens, the newly minted U.S. Open winner on Staying in the Game on September the 9th, 2017. Did you see that check that lady handed me? Like, yes. Man, if that doesn't make you want to play tennis, I don't know what will. So, yes, definitely. Quotation, end quote. Beyonce, the singer's speech to Hurricane Harvey survivors on September 8th, 2017. Quote, this today is a celebration of survival. Y'all are my family. Houston is my home. And I thank God that y'all are safe, that your children are safe. The thing that really matters is your health and your children and your family and your life. And I just want to say, I love you. End quote. Roxane Gay, the author of Hunger in response to negative comments on June 13th, 2017. Quote, it is helpful in that I think people get to see in real time what fat phobia looks like and just how careless people can be in considering that fat people deserve dignity. So I suppose it's a useful example of why I wrote my book. End quote. Simone Askew. She was the first Black woman to lead West Point Cadet, speaking about her appointment on August 4th, 2017. Quote, when I found out I was elected for first captain, I was excited, but was also thinking, hey, what a great team we're going to have. So really, it's humbling, but also exciting as I step into this new opportunity to lead the corps to greatness and with my team with me. End quote. Janet Mock, the trans activist speech at the Women's March on January 21st, 2017. Quote, we are here not merely to gather, but to move. And our movements require us to do more than just show up. It requires us to break out of our comfort zones and be confrontational. It requires us to defend one another when it is difficult. It requires us to truly see one another. End quote. Yvonne Orji, the Insecure actress speaking up for her fellow dreamers after the DACA announcement on September 5th, 2017. Quote, I am a beneficiary of the open door of immigration. My dreams are manifesting because of the promises embedded in the fabric of what makes or already makes this country great. To strip the hope and livelihood of a select few under the false guise of fear and preposterous. End quote. Jamel Hill, ESPN's SC6 co-host on Having a Voice, on September the 2nd or 21st, 2017. Quote, the same person that will tell me to stick to sports will also say Muhammad Ali was a great sports figure. What's the difference? The difference is now you know Muhammad Ali is right, end quote. Simone D. Sanders, the CNN commentator responding to a fellow panel's off-color, off-air comment on August 14, 2017. Quote, you don't get to tell me to shut up on national television. I'm sorry, under no circumstances do you get to speak to me in that manner. You should exhibit some decorum, end quote. Kamala Harris, the California senator, tweeting a response to Jeff Sessions dodging questions related to the Russia investigation on June the 13th, 2017. It was a simple question. Can Jeff Sessions point to the policy in writing that allows him to not answer a question? Host of our questions today? Question mark, end quote. Maisha Johnson, the Gold Star widow of Sergeant LaDavid Johnson, who died in active duty in Niger on October 23rd, 2017. That's, quote, that's what hurts me most. My husband is out here fighting for our country. Why can't you remember his name? Question mark. My husband was an awesome soldier, end quote. April Ryan, the reporter on her seated exchange with former White House Press Secretary Shauna Spicer on March 28, 2017. It was insulting, but people are seeing the treatment of the press and how we are treated. This is just par for the course, unfortunately. But I'll be back. I'll be back. Let's move on to Kofi. The actor who stole our hearts in Queen Sugar talks about his on-screen dad, Glenn Turman, about staying true in Hollywood. So for Kofi Cirabo, the past year has been quite transformative. It all began last summer, or rather 2016, at the start of Queen Sugar's second season on OWN, when he once again breathed life into Ralph Angel, the ever-reflective, still-finding-his-way younger brother of the Bordelone family. Then he charmed us as Malik in the blockbuster Girls Trip. Now he's adding finishing touches to Jump, a mental health-focused short film he wrote, directed, produced, and starred in. Yet, it was quite a year for him. At the age of 23, he's just getting started. Along with slaying at work, he's intent on living the way the three-letter tattoo on his right hand suggests. He's focused on now. Essence paired Cirabo with veteran actor Glenn Turman to discuss choices, heritage, and having vision for self. Let's dive in. Well, Glenn Turman, which also played his father on the show Queen Sugar, and if some of you, I don't know if you've ever seen Queen Sugar, but the father was on just a couple of episodes in the very beginning when the show first aired, but you know, he passed on the show. One question that Glenn Turman asked was, Kofi, you're doing a fine job as Ralph Angel. Tell me what you brought to the role and what you learned about yourself along the way. Kofi's response is, thank you. When I read the description, Ralph Angel was in a hard place. He was with his son and about to rob a liquor store, but I didn't see him as aggressive. I just thought he was broken. Even though I have not been incarcerated and don't have a son, I remember a time when I felt broken. I also know what it's like to try so hard and feel as if the world is against you. I brought that passion to the role, and sometimes I can see how close we are. Once everything hit, I, like Ralph Angel, had to say to myself, you created this, so own it and move forward from it. Turman's next question to him was, be careful what you ask for. Cerebo or Kofi Cerebo's response is, you just might get it. For me, acting is about connecting with people. I asked for these blessings and have worked so hard to be here, but I don't want to be a victim to my passion. You know, I'm learning it's about taking a step back to figure out what you need to do to become what you've asked for. I've been there. Your popularity soared with Girls Trip, which grossed more than $125 million. After my wife and I saw it and we came home, I'm watching TV and she stood in the doorway and said, try this, with a grapefruit in her hand. Were you surprised by how well the film performed? He laughed and he says, I'm always surprised because you never know. I remember thinking, oh, this is the movie we're making? Got it. We had a good time. You're a first generation Ghanaian American born and raised in Los Angeles. How was that experience? In first grade, I was asked, what's your favorite food? I said fufu and everybody laughed. I also remember asking my teacher not to say my full name. Last year, I went to Kumasi in Ghana for the first time and met the king, whose name is Nana, which is my first name. I didn't always understand the roots that are woven into my name, but that realization is happening now. And then the final question that he asked him is, one more question. What do you see for yourself in the future? His response is truth. I just want to keep exploring who I am and be real and transparent. So let's move on to healthy and happy spirituality. Your spirit team is here. In the Bible, the angel Gabriel came to Mary to let her know she was about to carry a baby to be named Jesus. Each of us has angels and support in the spirit world to guide us on our journey. Medium teacher and essence.com contributor Zaya shares how to connect with yours. Tell yourself that you are open to guidance from the highest good. This really helps you to believe it as well, so trust. Meditate for 10 minutes a day to practicing quieting your spirit. Spirit messages are often subtle and can require a bit of focus to receive and interpret in the beginning. Any type of meditation will do, even taking a walk in nature. Where you notice the little things. Stop playing the victim and look for the lesson in every situation. Research ways to hear from your spiritual aides. Begin working with your guides by making simple requests. And then finally, write a list of your desires and needs for your guides and see what manifests. Actually, there's three more. Go to sleep with an intended question. Ask your team to reveal the answers in your dream. Set a daily time to chat with your helpers. And then finally, be on the lookout for those common signs from spirits, whether feathers, coins, birds, and angels' numbers, which you may come across repeatedly. So it looks like that we have run out of time for today's episode of Essence Magazine. I hope that you've enjoyed it, and be sure to make sure that you're listening next time. I'm Nicole Hunter, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for a blind and print impaired audience. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, triangleradioreadingservice.org. So long until next time. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138.